2 pitch. Swing and a miss. Shut him out. The Philadelphia Phillies are 2008 World Champions of Baseball. It's Wednesday, September 16th, 2015. Welcome to the Philly Press Box Radio Roundtable, brought to you by shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. I'm Bill Furman. I'll be your host, along with my partner, Jim Chetchesko. And Chet, boy, oh boy, the NFL season is underway. It didn't quite get off to the kind of start the Eagles fans were hoping for. A horrible first half, a pretty exciting second half, but a few setbacks down the stretch. It left them with a 26-24 opening season loss.
Yeah, it sure didn't go the way we expected it. I expected a fairly easy win for the Birds, but it was indeed a tale of two halves Monday night down in Atlanta. And like you said, just too many mistakes. We'll address some of those with our guest tonight coming up shortly. Before turning our attention then to how it's going to be a different story, we hope, when the Cowboys come to town this weekend. And hey, before I forget, Bill, let's do this. Happy birthday, old man.
Well, thank you very much. I appreciate it. And, you know, I guess I'm not to the point that I stopped counting them. So I appreciate the happy birthday wishes.
Yep, but number 40 again, right?
To the important stuff. We have a terrific guest to sort all this out for us, a former Eagle, who these days is on the Birds pre- and post-game radio show on WIP. Kevin Riley. Kevin, welcome back to the Philly Press Box Radio.
Chet and Bill, glad to join you guys. I wish it could be after an Eagles win, but we'll put things in perspective tonight.
Yep.
I'm sure we will, because there is an awful lot to talk about.
I don't know how you guys felt, but if they didn't have the second half that they had, and just by coincidence, our post-game show is called the fifth quarter. If they had a fifth quarter, I think they would have won by 10 points, but they didn't. And if they didn't have the second half that they had, I would have been concerned. I really think when you take a look at all of the new people on the offensive line of scrimmage, the new people in the backfield, a brand-new quarterback, their timing was off. They were out of sync that whole first half. And they were three and out, and four and out. That wasn't good at all. And, you know, when you go from the preseason or the practice field into a real game, the tempo and the speed is anywhere from 5 to maybe 8% faster than you're used to. And I'm hoping that what we saw in the second half is the Eagles' offense that will continue throughout the year. I think that first half, it was guys with a lot of adrenaline running, maybe not up to speed with the speed of the game, and getting to know each other a little bit. But they didn't panic, and I got to give them credit. They did come back in the second half, but they dug themselves a hole that was just too large to get out of.
Yeah, they made it exciting, certainly. Anyway, took the lead briefly, but then Atlanta came back. The Eagles couldn't convert that field goal, couldn't get a stop on the final drive by the Falcons when they needed it. What was the key thing for you, Kevin? Was it the secondary? Was it the offensive line's problems in the first half? Why did the Birds lose on Monday night?
I think it's hard to pinpoint any one thing, but I'll tell you, a major disappointment for me was Ryan Matthews. I haven't been real high on Matthews because he's been injured. He wasn't the type of player when he was with San Diego that was a clutch player, and I'll just put it on the line. He was not a clutch player. And, you know, here we are on this drive coming down the field. First of all, he dropped a pass early in the ball game that, you know, really could have helped us. But he had, right before the 4th-and-1 came up, we had a 3rd-and-6, and he tripped over Kelce's leg and fell forward. And, you know, it's hard. You know, those things happen in a game, but they don't seem to happen to the really good players. And with 3rd-and-1, I was really disappointed with his, you know, effort on the dive play. you've got to go in there with your helmet down and a pad level that's lower than the guy coming up. Paul Wuerlo out of the University of Delaware, a walk-on at Delaware, a free agent in the NFL, continues to prove people wrong. Got a little bit of a chip on his shoulder because nobody thinks he can play at the next level. But he came in and he made a tremendous tackle because he got his pad level lower than Ryan's and was able to cut him off at the waist. You know, third and one, you've got to put your head down. This is what they're paying you the money for, is to get that clutch play. And I would have to tell you, I'm disappointed on fourth and one. I would have bet some money that, you know, Chip Kelly, who was known for going for it on fourth down more than almost any other coach in Division 1A when he was at Oregon, didn't go for it there. And with, you know, DeMarco Murray in your backfield, you know, you just wonder why didn't they do that. And there's no excuse for missing a 44-yard field goal in the dome, except for nerves. And that was another situation. But, you know, the Eagles dug themselves a really big hole. Two good news is out of it. The second half, they played well. They came out of there almost injury-free. Guys, if you look at the first week in the NFL, the number of injuries, even coming out of training camp, is at an all-time high. It's almost going to be like the survival of the fittest at the end of the season if this injury rate continues.
Yeah, all through the preseason and into the first week of the season, a lot of injuries, that's for sure, Kevin. Another obvious GOAT, and I'm surprised you didn't mention this guy yet, Byron Maxwell, the $63 million man. He did not have a great regular season debut for the Birds. I know he was going up against Julio Jones, one of the best in the business, but he just seemed really outmatched. He blamed it on technique. But what did you see out of Maxwell in his first start as an Eagle?
I saw a guy that looked like he was running back to his house to make sure he turned off his oven. You know, this guy was constantly chasing Julio Jones down. And the one thing that I thought the Falcons could have probably run all night was the slant play to Jones. First of all, Julio Jones, not afraid to go across the middle. Mm-hmm. And he ran that slant play about as well as you can. But, you know, that's the play you give up. You give up the slant because a six-yard slant, they got to get about eight of those to make a drive into a touchdown. And somewhere along the line, you're hoping that you make a play. But I was really disappointed in him coming up the line of scrimmage, trying to check Julio Jones at the line. This is what he's supposed to be good at, you know, that man-to-man coverage. And in the second half, I don't know if you guys noticed, he was coming up, but he wasn't even attempting to knock Jones off stride. You know, a lot of these plays are timing plays where you've got quarterbacks like Matt Ryan who are going to throw the ball to a spot. And, you know, they figure on the guy's going to be there one, two, three. And Julio Jones was. Well, if you get a shot on a guy at the line of scrimmage, you disrupt that timing. And next thing you know, Matt Ryan's got to go to the second or third receiver in his protocol. So the other thing that was disappointing is he was targeted 11 times, guys, and Julio Jones made 10 catches on him, or the receiver that he was covering. I mean, that's not a $63 man, yet alone a $63 million man. And the other thing that I was disappointed in a little bit with the defensive coordinator, wasn't giving him any help on over the top. We're in that single safety. That single safety's got to make a decision whether to go right or left. And I would have come out and with a double safety situation to help him out, knowing that Ryan, especially in the first half when Ryan was hot.
Yep.
Absolutely. Hey, Kevin, back over to the offense for just a second, because I want to get back to that Billy Davis, too, because that's one of my pet peeves. But back on the offense for just a second, you know, we bring DeMarco Murray in here because he's a downhill stud, and he's going to be the bell cow of this offense, and we give him eight carries, and most of those are sweeps. That's one thing I want to ask you about. And the second thing I wanted to ask you is from the passing game. They never stretched the field once. They didn't really even throw any mid-range passes other than to the tight ends down the middle. It's a 5-yard, 6-7-yard dink-and-dunk passing offense. To me, it was a boring offense watching it the other night. And I'm thinking they were a little more successful in the second half because the Falcons had a 3-touchdown lead. I'm not sure in a close game that's a very effective offense.
Well, you make a couple good points, and I was disappointed they didn't stretch the field. They've got a burner in Aguilar, and he was missing in action during the game. I think he was targeted twice. He might have had one catch. And this is the guy that can – he doesn't have the Deshaun Jackson speed, but he's got speed up there with the best of them. And I've always been a proponent, guys, of
you know, throwing a long ball on a second and five, just to make sure that you loosen the defense up. Even if you're not successful with it, you know, you let them know that you've got that in your repertoire. And, you know, as a former player and linebacker, you know, your defensive line, backs, they worry about that, you know, and they play a little more off you, they play a little more cautious and with less confidence when you stretch the field once in a while, because that's the big deal. You know, giving up the six-pointer, you can give up three, four, five plays of six, seven, eight, 9 yards and, you know, cause the team to kick a field goal or not get into the end zone, and nobody's going to really, you know, single you out. But, boy, you miss that long ball, everybody's got your number, and you've just played a stinky game. If you've given up one, you've given up two, you've played a terrible game. So I don't understand that. They should have gone down the field a little bit long. And the DeMarco Murray situation, I couldn't agree with you more. They seem to not go to his strong suit, which is, you know, that quick hit right up the middle where he's on top of a linebacker before anybody gets an angle on him. There wasn't a whole lot of blocking in the first half. I think the offensive linemen admitted that they didn't block well. It almost looked like the Atlanta came out with a scheme they were unfamiliar with. Thank God they made adjustments in the second half. But the surprising thing that I want to bring up now is DeMarco Murray had 12 touches, he had four pass receptions and eight carries for 9 yards. And this guy, Darren Sproles, who's our third string, you know, running back, had 12 catches, but he had a lot more yardage. He had over 126 yards with his 12 touches. So, you know, you kind of got to wonder, we got these two guys that ran 12 plays for a total of 10 yards. So, that's less than a yard a carry in Matthews and Murray. And they've got to get that, you know, boat rolling, or it's going to be a long season.
Yeah, Chip was asked about some of that, and he said he's going to do whatever works offensively. We heard so much going into the season about the three-headed monster, you know, these three great running backs, and yet the pass-to-run ratio the other night was something like 3-1, 77% to 23%. Did that surprise you, and can we expect Chip to do that again in the future?
Well, I think Chip would tell you that, you know, when you're behind, that ratio is going to get out of sync. You know, yeah. It's going to get out of kilter, and I think that makes it look that way. I thought in the first quarter they tried to mix it up pretty evenly, and it wasn't working. I don't know this, but I looked. The Atlanta front four was really playing two-gap extremely well, and I think they had our guys confused. They did figure it out in the second half, like I said. But, you know, I think that number can get a little bit crazy when you're behind by, you know, three scores and you got to catch up. You're going to start throwing the football because you got to make big yardage. And, you know, you got a clock to worry about. So, you know, that bothered me a little bit. But I think these guys are going to be okay. I really do. I really like the fact that what I've seen from Bradford, not only in preseason game and this game in the second half, but I've been to a couple practices, you know, because I'm an alumnus and I can get to go to these practices. This kid is really accurate, and he's got a gun of an arm. I thought in the first half he was a little bit late on pulling the trigger. And I'm sure that was just the speed of the game in his first regular season game in almost 2 years. So let's see what he does this week. It's going to be an exciting week. I can't believe, guys, the line is at 5. Did you guys see that?
Yeah.
Over 5-point favorites.
Saw that today.
That really surprises me. I know Des Bryant is out, but that surprises me a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Me too. Hey, let's go back over to that the defense and Billy Davis, your Billy Davis comment, because, you know, I've been a proponent over the last, well, we'll call it 2 years in a game, you know, that I'm not much for the defensive scheme. I think Fletcher and Williams last year just got hammered because they were in single coverage, and especially Fletcher, I don't think they gave the kid a chance within the scheme to be successful. He wasn't good enough to cover the elite receivers in this league, and they continued to get him burned. And now here we have what's supposed to be an elite corner. We put him in the exact situation, and he gets burned too. We're on our third set of defensive backs in 3 years under this regime. It worries me. It worries me that they're not changing up.
Well, it would really help if we had a pass rush on in the first half, and as good a guy, as good a job, and these guys are doing a tremendous job, the front three on the run. I'll tell you, Fletcher Cox is a monster. He has taken two guys with him on almost every play. So, he's not the guy you expect to be putting pressure on. But they're not getting the kind of pressure they need from the tackles. And I didn't see them do a lot of blitzing, which really surprised me. I mean, you got Connor Barwin now and Kiki Alonso. These two guys, they can fly, as big guys. And I just didn't see them being very aggressive with the blitz. And Ryan had way too much time back there. And if you've got defensive backs that, are not all-pro caliber, they're going to lose guys after 3 or 4 seconds. It's hard to hold on to those guys. So I don't know how much to judge the defensive backs just early with the pass rush we had, but certainly the scheme needs to be jazzed up a little bit. You know, you go back to when Jimmy Johnson was the defensive coordinator, and he just seemed to have teams off balance every week with his blitzing style. And it's not like this year. And I've talked to Bill Davis. I talked to him in the summer. I ran into him at two Little League baseball games, and he couldn't have been happier with the corners they got and, Kiki Alonso and the way the front three was hitting. I just thought we were going to have a really, really good defense, but it didn't look that good in the first half, although they really picked it up in the second half. I just think we need more pressure and we got a little more creative there with the defensive scheme.
Well, and that leads me to my follow-up of that. You never mentioned Brandon Graham, and to me, Brandon Graham was a ghost in this game. He did nothing. He did nothing that you could see.
Yeah.
And to your point, I think his strength is probably in the blitz game and in the pass rush game. He's not going to make a lot of plays in space. So if he's not blitzing, he might as well not be out there.
I think the other thing that surprised me a little bit is, I thought I'd see more of Vinnie Curry on the field, and I didn't see that much of him. He's the other guy that can really put pressure on. When they did send Kiki Alonso, they sent him up the middle. And, I feel that guy's really can mess you up when he's sitting outside the tight end and you don't know if he's in coverage or he's coming. I think he'd be tough on a running back trying to pick him up on the blitz. But you're right about Graham. I don't know if they always say they need to put him in a position to do a better – they need to do a better job of putting people in position to make plays. They certainly didn't put him in a position to make any good plays with that. The one positive that I saw was Connor Barwin can cover running backs out of the backfield, probably as good as any outside linebacker I've seen in a long time. This guy, for his size, does a really good job of coverage. And the only thing that I worry about is I'm wearing him out, because you really got to hustle and you tear up a lot of energy when you're running after these running backs that are making that kind of move. But he did a good job. I just want to see him blitz a little more. I think that, you got – when you blitz guys, and I tell you this, and you start making the plays, you start to gain a confidence. And, the other team, especially the offense, they start to mumble among themselves. But you got to make sure you got the guys in the defensive backfield that don't let up the big six if you do come with the blitz. And maybe they were a little bit afraid of that in the opening game.
All right, Kevin, we're going to put that game behind us and look ahead to Dallas. But before we do that, we're going to take a little two-minute timeout and talk about what you've been up to the first part of September. When we were trying to schedule this program, you said you were going to be unavailable last week because you were going to be in Africa. And we did see some of the pictures on Facebook. Looks like you did some interesting things. What was that trip to Africa all about?
Well, I was over there with some friends, a friend of mine, John Riley, and former linebacker Frank LeMaster. And we were in South Africa, Cape Town. But the exciting 4 days we spent in Namibia, in the bush. We took a light plane that only held 8 people, about 500 miles from civilization, and they have a lodge, and they have these box tents that you stay in. And we were out there for 4 days, and we saw about every kind of animal you could see. Very, very up close to a couple lions. As a matter of fact, one night in our camp, a pride of lions, probably about 7 or 8, came and they lingered for a couple hours as the hunt went on between the male and the female, who came back at 4:30 in the morning to let everybody know that they had a kill. And with a roar that I want to tell you, I thought was on stereo bass, nobody moved from their beds. You get excited like that, you get nervous, and you get scared. Then next thing you know, you're talking about it for 48 hours. So we had some exciting moments, but what a beautiful, beautiful country. We got the Victoria Falls. I mean, something. I know we have Niagara Falls, but Victoria Falls was spectacular. And Cape Town also has a very metropolitan city, also has some great landscape. And then out there in the bush, there was a couple nights where they just pulled the Jeep over and we had the cocktail hour as the sun went down. And I'll tell you, it doesn't get any better than that. Had a great time, guys.
And did I see a picture of you on a giant elephant?
You believe that? Yeah, I was on a elephant with my wife, and we had a guide on that elephant. And that was a two-mile trek we took, single file with the elephants. And crossing a stream, I have a picture of it, there was a herd of over 150 water buffalo, who are probably the meanest-looking animals that I've seen outside of the male lion. And, you know, you start to think to yourself, how did I get from Wilmington, Delaware, out here in the middle of Africa? And I, you know, you could turn back the clock a century and you wouldn't know where you were, riding on an elephant looking at water buffalo and not a car or you know, a cell tower anywhere in the distance, even a building. So it was pretty exciting. I would say that a trip like that, probably life-changing. At least I saw some things that changed my view of the world, I'll tell you that.
Well, Kevin, just one more question on the personal side before we get to the quick Cowboys conversation. You've always got something going on, whether you're fundraising for somebody or you've got your foundation thing going. What is going on in Kevin Riley's world right now?
Well, it's been a very, very busy time, but a good time. I've been all over the country this year doing motivational talks, and I've been to California. I just came back from Texas 4 weeks ago. I went down to Sam Houston State University, where the former Delaware coach, Casey Keeler, is the coach, and we're friends, and he had me down there to talk to the team. And that's always really cool to talk to these college kids. And last year I had the opportunity to talk to the Baltimore Ravens team. John Harbaugh invited me down. So I've been doing a lot of speaking all over the country and to different groups, and I find it tremendously fulfilling. And, you know, coming up right now, I'm going to be this Saturday. I'll be doing Villanova football. I signed on as the analyst for the Villanova football team, and we did the Fordham game last week in the Bronx, and we've got Delaware this week, and then I've got the Eagles on Sunday. So this is a really busy time for me, but I'm just blessed to be healthy and being able to do it and keeping my contacts on, because as you guys know, this is not work when you have this much fun doing it. It's really a pleasure.
That's awesome.
All right, Kevin, you mentioned the Cowboys, of course, 4:25 this Sunday, the home opener for the Eagles, the hated Dallas Cowboys in town. What's the key going to be to defeating the Cowboys and getting back to 1-1?
Well, you know, the key is going to be stopping Romo. He's got a little bit of a confidence factor going now, especially after the big win. And by the way, guys, you know, I would have liked to seen them lose, but when they're coming in here, I like to see them coming off a win because they're a little less desperate. I think that works in our favor also. But it's our home field. This is our house. And I believe that it's going to be a good battle. And I think the guy they got to stop is Romo. I'm not impressed with their running game. I know they have a great offensive line, but if you don't have somebody to run behind it, then what good is that? And I think without Dez Bryant, they're really challenged offensively without that running game going. So if we can just get to him and if our defense can hold the Cowboys to, say, under 20 points, I think that Chip and company, if they continue to play like they did in the second half, can put up 30 points, maybe 31, 32 points, and get our win against the Dallas Cowboys. Romo scares me because he's one of those guys that when he's on, he's really on, and then he has these big bumps in the road where he makes big, big mistakes. But he's a dangerous quarterback, and he's got a lot of mileage under him right now because he's got all that experience, and that's what scares me a little bit, especially what they saw with our defensive backs last week.
What do you see offensively? Do you see the Eagles doing a whole lot different? I'm sure they're going to – my thought would be they're going to come out and try to establish the running game pretty quickly that they never got established this week. But the Dallas defense is not a bad defense like they were 2 years ago. They got a lot better last year, and they're pretty solid.
They are pretty solid, and – you know, I think you play, if I'm the coach, I'm going to play the emotional card here. You got DeMarco Murray coming off a poor performance. Let's call it what it is. 8 carries, 9 yards. That's a poor performance for a guy that had, you know, close to 1,900 yards last year. He's playing against his old teammates. There's a revenge factor in there. He wants to prove himself. So, you know, I'd have a couple design plays that we didn't have last week against Atlanta that puts the ball in his hands early to get him going. And I think that would put some pressure on that defense and really open things up maybe to give, you know, number seven back there time to throw in the pocket and see if Bradford can make the connections. But if we get the running game going, and we really need to get that going, I think this offense is going to really percolate. So I would play the emotional card and, you know, really put the ball into Murray's hand early and often to get the offense moving. This is a good defense. They're really good against the run. They've got good linebackers, good defensive line. I'm a little suspect of their defensive backs. I think that's where we have some opportunity. And, you know, if there's a key guy that needs to get into the swing of things in this offense, it's Aguilar because he's got the speed.
Yeah, I want to see both Murray and Aguilar have big games on Sunday. I want to ask you again about Billy Davis and what happened on Monday night with Atlanta and Julio Jones. The Cowboys, of course, watched that. So how will the Cowboys try to, victimize the Eagles' secondary? And conversely, will Billy Davis make any changes in how he's going to strategize and play and use Byron Maxwell against those receivers and tight end Jason Witten?
Well, if I was, you know, trying to make an offensive game plan against the Eagles defense, and you know, I would hope they don't come out and play that much single safety. And you know what scared me, guys, is Maragos was playing single safety out there quite a bit, and that scares me because the guy's a great special teamer, but he doesn't have the speed, I don't believe, to play single safety and be able to make a move to one side or the other to help over the top. So if they come out in single safety, I got to believe you're going to see a lot of trips formation with Dallas and getting Witten into the game, like you said, three men out to one side, Witten on the other. And you could even have a back coming out of the backfield. That put a lot of pressure on a situation like that. And you know, let's see if we blitz a little more. But I hope they get out of that very ordinary defense that they have and start doing a little more creative things like blitzing. That's what scares me, and Witten is the guy that's going to probably have to carry the load with Dez Bryant out.
Well, Kevin, I just have one more question for you. And watching that Sunday night game between the Cowboys and the Giants, it was a bit of a sloppy game and a kind of a crazy ending, from the Giants' standpoint. But the thing, my takeaway from that game and how it fits to this Eagles team is really something that I want to see Sunday. I thought that Giants-Cowboys game was an old-style NFC, very, very NFC East, very, very physical game, and a lot of bodies banging around. And the Eagles seem to me to want to be more of a finesse team on the offensive side of the ball anyway. So I'm kind of interested to see how this matchup goes from that standpoint.
Well, you bring up a great point, and I would have to say that the defense needs to be a little more physical. And I think they can be. I know they can be. But they need a little confidence right now. And I think they need the right play selection. And that's where the blitzing comes in. But I think you hit the nail on the head. It's going to be, you know, an afternoon game, early afternoon game. I looked at the forecast. It was going to be really good weather. That crowd is going to be into it because although they've lost, you know, some I guess a little bit of confidence maybe in the team because the phone calls I got post-game, you know, people just venting because who didn't have this one as a W on the Eagles' schedule? So disappointment there, but we're in the game week two, and I think the loyal fans will be out there cheering crazy. I think the link is going to be on fire. And if you can't get up, fellas, for an afternoon game and a fall afternoon in Philadelphia with, you know, 60,000 fans there, playing against the Dallas Cowboys when you're 0-1, and you're not going to get up for anything.
That's right. Yeah, I will be in the link, by the way, Mr. Riley.
Well, you look for me. Are you going to be in the press area, press box area?
No, I'm going to be down in row 5.
Oh, row 5. Will you
nice.
Wait right, to me?
Right
I'm right up there.
Below Frank LeMaster, actually. I'm in the same section right below Frank LeMaster.
All right, well. You look up into the box where Merle Reese is. I'm in there with him and Mike Quick during the game, feeding them information.
Right. Okay.
Hey, Kevin, it sounds like you're leaning toward the Eagles. What's your official prediction? You want to give us a prediction for the game?
Well, I think they're going to
really come out of it. Chip doesn't lose two games in a row. I think this offense is going to roll a little bit. I think the defense is going to make some changes. They got that one bad game out of their system. I look for them to roll here. I'm looking like a 32-21 score.
I like it.
32-21. Okay. Well, Kevin, I think we have taken up actually a little more of your time than we were supposed to. So we want to say thank you for coming by again. Always great to talk to you every time you come on with us.
All right, guys. It was a pleasure joining you. And go Eagles, beat the Cowboys.
All right. Thanks, Kevin.
Amen. Thanks, Kevin.
All right. Bye-bye.
All
right. I like the way he thinks.
Oh, I do, too. I do, too. But we'll get to our predictions a little bit later on. How's that?
Yep.
All right. Let's take a break. Thank our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, by logging on to www.shopforkisses.org's website. You become connected to over 3,000 stores, including all the big ones you already shop at. Every purchase made gets you cash back, and each purchase benefits the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, which helps families dealing with childhood cancer throughout the Delaware Valley. If you have any questions, contact Bob Sullivan at bobsullivan.shopcom@gmail.com or give him a call at 484-319-8043. And, Chet, I want to go ahead and get our trivia question out here tonight, but then I want to come back to something on the Kisses for Kyle right quick to see if you're aware of or that our listeners are aware of. Okay, so let's get the question out. For the first correct answer to call in will be the winner of an autographed picture of the Eagles' former quarterback, Nick Foles, who led the Rams to an upset win over the Seahawks on Sunday. Here is your question. The Eagles' playoffs now, individual record for receiving yards was set against the Dallas Cowboys in a wild card playoff game. Who holds that record with 146 receiving yards? Okay? The Eagles playoff individual record for receiving yards was set against the Dallas Cowboys in a wild card playoff game. Who holds the record with 146 yards? Okay? You got that, Chet? Scratching your head aren't you, brother?
It was not Freddie Mitchell, I'll tell you that.
It was not Freddie Mitchell because he didn't play against the Cowboys.
That's
right. What I wanted to throw out, and I don't have all the details right at my fingertips, Chet, but the Kisses for Kyle Foundation, Sharon Snyder, she put out a post on Facebook, and I saw it the other day, and I just didn't have time to get it all together. But they are raffling off, and I hope I get this right, two tickets to every Flyers, every Phillies, every Sixers, and every Eagles game in one package.
Really?
Yes. Check that out.
I didn't see that.
So I'm not telling a story, but look under the Kisses for Kyle Foundation's website, and I believe it's $20 a raffle ticket, I want to say, or $25, and you win two tickets to every of the four sporting events. Don't hold me to exactly the details, but it's very close to that. So check that out, and, what a prize, especially if you want it for $20, $25.
I'll tell you.
So, yeah, check that out. It's a good it's great, obviously. So anyway, here we go. Let's see, Chet. Let's move on. Let's talk a little bit about the Eagles and the Cowboys, and get your take on where do you think this thing's going to go, and any comments you have other than what Kevin said about the Atlanta game.
Well, I think they're going to play a lot better than they did the other night. I don't know if it was jitters or just lack of preparation or maybe not having played the regulars enough in the preseason, but it certainly took the guys, especially on offense, a lot of time to get rolling on Monday night in Atlanta. But I know they were playing from behind, and so they were getting a little more room out there, but they certainly looked a whole lot better in the second half. Bradford looked better. The running game still wasn't utilized a whole lot because they were trailing. Jordan Matthews had a real good game. The defense picked it up, too, in the second half. And as Kevin was alluding to, I mean, it's the home opener now this Sunday. You're going to have 68,000 screaming fans at the link. you know it's only week two, but it's really a must-win situation because you lose this one, you're 0-2. Dallas is 2-0, plus they have the win in the division against you. This is, I think, a must-win game in week two. And as he said, you got to be up for this one. And I think they have the talent, and they're going to be ready emotionally and otherwise. And I'll make my official prediction whenever you ask for it, but I feel pretty good about this one. And I think Chip's going to have a few things up his sleeve for the Cowboys.
Well, you know, my biggest – well, there was a lot of takeaways from this game, but the thing that I think really surprised me more than anything that I saw was I had no idea who that offense was that came on the field in the first half. There was no hurry up, you know. It was three and out. It looked like every other football team you've ever seen, and that's not that fast paced offense was nowhere to be found. And I didn't get it, you know. And I'm thinking to myself, why are we doing this? And then when they did get things going, finally. As we mentioned earlier with Kevin, that dink and dunk 5-7 yard offense is not going to win football games. You know, I think the offense looked a lot better, obviously, later. But when you're three touchdowns down or thereabouts, and the defense is playing a whole different style because they have a three touchdown lead, I don't really know that it's indicative of being real successful. You know, I think we've got to see more. But certainly that offense is not the run and gun and run and shoot thing we're thinking we're going to see. It's going to, you know, play offense like a pinball game.
Yeah, and like as Kevin said, I do want to see them get DeMarco Murray going in this one, especially against his old team, and I want to see them stretch the field. You were saying that as well. You got to get the ball downfield. Nelson Aguilar, I don't know if he wasn't ready for his, primetime debut on Monday night or what, but I know he's a rookie, but he's got to come up bigger in week two. Jordan Matthews did look like a stud. But beyond that, you want to see them get Cooper or Miles Austin or Josh Huff or somebody else involved. It can't be all Jordan Matthews. So I do want to see them mix it up a little bit more as far as running and passing. And I want to see them go downfield more than they did the other night, which was almost not at all. So those are a couple of things I want to see. And I also have to see the offensive line play better. I don't think Bradford was sacked, but he was hurried quite a bit, especially in the first half. Some of those new guys, the guards, looked like they were struggling a bit. And Jason Peters, the old veteran, did not have his best game either. He was getting beat on several occasions on the outside. So I don't know if he's just getting old or what, but that offensive line remains a concern for me.
Yeah, and I think the other thing we're going to see over the next couple weeks, too, is there a lack of respect for these wide receivers. You know, there's no playmakers on this team that I think, you know, there's no Julio Jones kind of player on this team. And, you know, Matthews is good. I think, you know, Matthews is a good receiver. He's not Julio Jones. But, you know, if the other teams feel like they can play us in man, play our receivers in man, they're going to be blitzing and blitzing and blitzing, and Bradford's going to be in trouble. And, you know, we talked about this almost exactly last season before the year with Nick Foles. You know, how do you get him off that 27-2 year before? It's to pressure him. And they did that to him, and they did it to Sanchez, and them guys threw interceptions. They made turnovers. And that's what worries me here is if they don't have the respect for these receivers and think they can man them up, watch out, because they're going to be sending 7-8 guys, and then you got problems.
I can't take the suspense, Bill. What's your prediction for Sunday?
My prediction for Sunday is I like the Eagles in this game before they lost. You know, I thought going in, I like the Eagles at home in this game. I'm not sure I like them on the road, but that's way, you know, that's a few weeks down the road. But I'm mm-hmm. going to stick with it. I'm going to go 27-24 Eagles. I think it is going to be a smash mouth game, and we'll see if the Eagles are up to the task. I think it's going to be tough. I think it's going to be a tough game, but I'm going Eagles 27-24.
I'm going Eagles 37-27. It's going to be, fairly high scoring, but the Eagles will get their points and hopefully hold Dallas in check. 37-27 Eagles is my prediction.
All right. Well, hey, let's get back to the game for just 1 second, because I'm not gonna get off of here without getting your opinion on the field goal decision that was missed. The offense was rolling down the field. It's fourth down. Chip looked very indecisive. Did he want to run a play? Did he want to kick it? He cost the team quite a few seconds to get that play off, and then Parkey goes in and misses the kick. What was your take on that? And then I'll give you mine.
My take is I think they made the right decision to go field goal because you got to get the lead at that point. It was only 44 yards. It's in a dome, as Kevin mentioned. But then you got to make the field goal too. People, are saying a day later that, oh, well, they should have gone for it. That's because they missed it, okay? But you're expecting your field goal kicker to do the one job that he has in that situation, to make the field goal. So I think the decision was the proper one, to go for the 3 points, but it was just not made quick enough. They should have either, gotten the guys out there with a little more time on the play clock. Chip said it was 7 seconds when they snapped it. It was really about 3.5 or 4 seconds when they snapped it, and they just looked like they weren't ready. I don't know if Parkey's right yet. He says he's healthy. He says he's fine, but I'm still a little concerned about him. But anyway, I think the decision was right to go for the field goal. That would have given you the lead, and then you're putting it on your defense to hold, Matty Ice in check in that final 2 minutes, which I know is a tall task. But the right thing to do is go for the field goal.
Well, and you know what? I hate when we're on this show and I agree with you. It just doesn't make it near as much fun. But I do agree with you. I do agree with you. I think the field goal was the right thing. However, I think where Chip messed up on this is once he wasn't sure exactly what he wanted to do quickly,
he
needed to call a timeout.
Exactly.
You can't use those timeouts this week. It doesn't hurt you to call them. Call the timeout. Get the kid in there. Give him some. Kickers are weird dudes. We know that. Let him get in there, get set up, and he knocks that thing through, and they take the lead. So, I mean, it's one of those deals where he's out of his mind a bum if they go for it on fourth down and they don't make it in that situation. He went for the lead. I think it's a good decision to go for the lead. I just didn't like the timing of it.
Yep.
So, hey, well, listen, Chet, part of our Philly Press Box Radio pick'em pool was that the leader of the pool each week gets an opportunity to come on the show and chirp a little bit or you never know exactly how they're going to play this thing out. But our buddy Kevin McClure ended up the winner of the first week. We actually had four guys that were tie, and Kevin, believe it or not, won the tiebreaker points-wise. But his swing game, and I'll go ahead and say this, his swing game was he took the Atlanta Falcons. And there was because actually going into Monday, there was a different leader. But when it came out on Monday, Kevin had the Falcons, and that ended up being the swing game, and he won the tiebreaker. So we're going to give Kevin, he's just joining us, I believe, and we're going to give him an opportunity to talk for a few minutes, and he can chirp with the guys he's beating their butts, or he can talk Eagles Falcons. Kevin, welcome.
Hey, Bill. Hey, Chet. How are you guys doing today?
Hey, Kevin. Doing all right.
Yep. I think I'll pass on chirping. What's that?
How did you get to the top?
I think I picked a lot of upsets this week, and a lot of times I thought it was a rough week when I was going through it. I couldn't really come up with the Packers over the Bears might have been one of the only games I saw that I didn't think could go either way. Fortunately, I was able to hit a lot of those. Like I thought the Seahawks and Rams would be close. I took the Rams because they were at home. A lot of the home teams I took the Eagles and the Bills. A lot of people thought that they were playing teams that would beat them, and I think that's kind of my strategy to stick with the new coach playing at home, I think, is a very tough tough combination to beat. And the Colts couldn't do it, and neither could the Eagles. So, you know, that was part of it. And, you know, but I went against it with the Vikings over the 49ers, or I probably would have had to lead outright all by myself. So,
what was
really
your take on the Eagles game? You picked
the
Falcons, what did you think how that whole game went about?
I think the thing that surprised me the most was the inability to get any real. They got the pressure on Brian. I didn't think they got enough pressure on him, at least not as much as I thought. Because you know all you heard leading up to the game was how lousy the Falcons' offensive line was, and they really protected him pretty well, except for you know a handful of plays in the second half. And you know, and it really hurt them because they had the defense set up that they were going to get pressure, wouldn't have time to hit some of those throws to Julio Jones. And you know, Bill, I think you and I talked about it. Like the Falcons probably could have been up, you know, four touchdowns. They could have been up 20-35-3 at the half almost. I mean, they let a couple of you know, that pass that Alonzo intercepted. You know, Ryan's got to throw that up a little higher, or that's a touchdown. The guy slipped and fell on his route on third down on the first drive. You know, that's going to be a catch. And that would have kept that drive going. So, I mean, and really in the second half, you know, John Gruden went crazy about how well Connor Barwin played that ball. But it hit him in the back of the head. He had two steps on him. So that's a touchdown. So I think the Eagles definitely have to find a way to get – if they're going to keep doing that, I think they're going to get beat deep. And, you know, I don't see any change at all unless they change schematically that they're going to be able to not lead the league in the big plays again. I mean, that really did you guys think it's anything changed from last year watching that, you know, from the pass coverage side of things? So you would
not a bit.
Think going
out
against the big receiver. And I think the other thing that scared me, guys, is the fact that they couldn't stretch the field. Like, No receptions over 10 yards. It seemed like, you know, I'm like we're really worried when you play a team like the Jets, for instance. You know, they're going to show the Eagles absolutely no respect at all. And really, why should they? You know, if you're going to just dink and dunk 5 yards every time, it seems like the only guy that can get downfield is a tight end. You know, so that worries me a little bit. So,
hey, Kevin, there's a co-host on this show that said that. He thought that front seven might be the best in the NFL.
I mean, I listened last week and I heard him say that. And I'm hoping that I mean, the pass rush was there last year. So I don't think, you know, Chet, you were that far off. I think it was hard to criticize that group as not being one of the top pass rushing groups in the league last year, but it just didn't pan out like it should have against the, you know, a bottom feeder team like Atlanta. And now this week you got a challenge because, you know, I think we would all agree that, you know, everybody thinks the Cowboys offensive line was by far the best in the NFL. So, you know, hopefully maybe they take that challenge on and get a few sacks because, you know, on Romo. And I think,
let's not rush to judgment after one game. I think we're always often guilty of that, but it's only one game. So let's see what happens in a couple of weeks ahead.
Right, there are some teams they should still be able to get, you know, pass rush on, and you know the 85 Bears gave up I think 35 points opening day or something like that. So
there you go.
You know, anything can happen. You know, it just depends. Like you said, sometimes they have a bad day, I think there is some. You know, the Falcons did have a month to prepare for the Eagles, and that probably helped them a little bit. So we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know how it is on you know, with teams with a quick week, how they do. I'm confident. I think they're going to win this week, but it's, you know, I just have a feel that they're back at home and that they'll play a lot better. I really wasn't impressed with the Cowboys that much either. If you watch that game, I mean, they looked out of sorts, you know, the whole game on offense. I mean, they made some just major errors. They had no business winning that game, so.
That's a hint that you're taking the Eagles. Do you have an official or do you want to share an official prediction, or are you giving away?
I'll share. I think the Eagles will win this game this week. I'd probably say it's going to be close, though. you know, and I'd probably say 27-24.
That's what Bill said.
I didn't hear that. Really? You know, I think the Cowboys are, you know, are good enough that the way they'll move the ball, that I think they'll keep it close. I think it's a real tight division game, and you know, I think it's going to be a blowout. I don't know if I'm ready to predict that. I think just get the win and get, you know, on to the next couple of weeks. I still think the Eagles are the favorite to win the division, but it's, you know, losing this week would not make things easy. That's for sure. You know, you're almost 2.5 games behind the Cowboys if you lose this week. So, you know, definitely one you want to get.
Well, Kevin, congratulations on winning week one, but don't get too comfortable in that spot, okay? Don't get too comfortable.
Yeah. I'm hoping to get on numerous times this year.
Okay.
We are not planning on you being back on next week, my friend. I can tell you that.
No offense.
All right, Kevin, we appreciate it. Thanks.
Yep. Thanks, Bill. We'll talk to you. Thanks, Chet. We'll see you guys
soon.
Bye.
Okay. Hey, Chet, as we move on, you know, we set up an interesting deal with our buddy Carl Henderson over at Carl's Cards, where we started doing Carl's Corner to help update with all the local signings of Philadelphia athletes and all that. So tonight we have our special guest, Carl Henderson. Carl's going to come on and we're going to let him run down the signings. And he just had Jerry Cheevers, and I do want to go back and because we haven't had the chance to talk to him on the air since he had him, but I want to get back to his Ron Hextall signing and get his comments on that right quick, because I know it was a big thing for him. So, Carl, welcome.
Gentlemen, how are you?
Hey, Carl.
Doing great.
How you doing?
Doing great.
Good.
Give us a rundown of the signings right quick, and then we'll get back to that Ron Hextall signing, because I know that was one that you really really wanted to do.
Absolutely. Thank you. This Saturday we've got three more of the Broad Street Bullies coming in, Dave Schultz, Oris Kinderchuk, and Don Selesky. They'll be in the store from noon to 1:30. You know, tickets are available. So we're looking for a good crowd, and I understand that both you gentlemen are going to pay us a visit.
Yes, and I'm sure there's a lot of excitement about that building as well.
Yeah,
well,
absolutely.
Do I need to set up another table for the
I
two
think you
of
may
you
have
sign
to.
Autographs?
All right. You may have to.
You know. moving on.
Please.
I guess October 10th is our annual Customer Appreciation Day. We do a lot of good things, a lot of giveaways. But we've got Gary Dornhofer, Larry Goodenough, Bobby Shantz signing autographs that day. We'll be giving away a bunch of free tickets for that. People can go online and check that out. We've also got a friend of ours who just recently came out with a book, Mr. 560. Bill's met him. I'm not sure, Chet, if you've met him or not, but he's got an interesting story in that book, and Harry will be here for a few hours signing copies of his book that day as well. And then here's an interesting name that's going to, you know, go back a few years. We've got, yes, we can, Dave Cash coming in the store on Saturday, October 17th.
I like
so,
it.
So, that's an interesting name. So
absolutely.
We're looking forward. Yeah, we're looking forward to him. So.
608 hits
me.
In three Philly seasons, Carl.
That's amazing. It's amazing. And what did we get for him?
Refresh my memory.
A bag of groceries.
Oh, man.
It was one that we let get away. But, no, he was at the tail end of his career. But he was a nice player and a lot of personality. I got the chance to meet him down in Clearwater this past year, and that's where this whole thing got started. So I'm looking forward to having him in the store as well. So,
all right. Well, give us a quick Ron Hextall story.
I asked him. He was very the personality was phenomenal. He was great. He was very, you know, engaged in conversation. We talked about a number of things, and I asked him about his son, Brett, who, you know, was with the Phantoms last year, and I just assumed he was coming back, and as soon as I said, you know, I mentioned his name, it was like, ooh, it was a bad word. And he goes, oh, he's gone in a different direction. And I was like, not expecting that.
But
I found out that his Brett's wife is a doctor, and she took a job in Iowa. So
they don't play much hockey there.
No, I can't imagine that. All he really had to say was didn't see that one coming. He was quite disappointed, actually. But he was awesome. He, you know, we talked about a number of things. He's really looking forward to this season with the new coach, and he treated us, you know, he treated us very well. Couldn't ask for, you know, for a better private signing.
Nice,
great. Well, give us a 10 second Eagles Cowboys score.
Birds.
Eagles,
yes, of course. Thank Come you. On, Chet. Come on.
Just making please. Sure.
Please. I'd have them 16-0 if I could.
I hear you. Well, Carl, we appreciate you coming on. And hey, real quick, where can people get a hold of you to get to these signings? Let's give us your rundown.
Carlscards.com is probably the easiest, but the phone number is 610-789-4996.
Carl, we'll see you Saturday.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, great show.
Thank you.
All right, Carl.
Thank
thanks,
you.
My friend.
Yep, good night. Yep, bye.
Well, Chet, time is getting away from us here, and I do not want to miss your parting shot because I know it's special. Moses Malone, I believe, is your topic, so have at it.
Yeah, Bill, it was news that kind of got lost in the shuffle on Sunday with the NFL's first weekend of football in the spotlight. But, yeah, another one of my sports heroes from back in the day left us at a far too young age. Between 1977 and 82, the 76ers went to the NBA Finals 3 times but came up short each time. They needed something to get them over the hump. Well, in the summer of 82, the Sixers signed reigning league MVP Moses Malone to an offer sheet and then worked out a trade for the big guy in the hope that he was the missing piece. Boy, was he ever. In his first season as a Sixer, Malone averaged 24.5 points, 15.3 rebounds. He won the league MVP award again, and of course teamed with Dr. J, Mo Cheeks, Andrew Toney, and Bobby Jones to coast through the playoffs. Fo. They swept the Knicks, lost just once to the Bucks, then swept the defending champion Lakers to give the Sixers their second ever league title. He was a great Sixer, terrific player, the chairman of the boards, a Hall of Famer, and now another old favorite of mine, gone too soon, just 60 years young. Rest in peace, Moses, and thank you for the memories.
Great job. And I will tell you, my collection, Chet, had an opportunity to meet Moses, has nice. The Sports Illustrated Promised Land photo blown up into a 16x20 autographed by Moses Malone, and it's a great piece, and also a huge fan of his as well.
Excellent. Do you have a parting shot also?
I do, but just a very short one. And this is for the Eagles fans out there. It is not a sprint. It's a marathon. No reason to jump off the bridge. Take them one at a time. Get back into winning ways and get this ship righted and headed in the right direction.
Yes,
that's
sir.
My parting shot, my friend. Okay, so
let's do it.
At the top of the hour. So let's thank our special guest, Kevin Riley, for joining us. Of course, Kevin McClure stepping in, along with Carl Henderson from Carl's Cards and Collectibles for his continued support of the show. Mary Flanagan, our marketing extraordinaire behind the scenes, and our sponsor, shopforkisses.org, the online shopping network of the Kisses for Kyle Foundation. For Jim Chesko, this is Bill Furman. Hoping you enjoy the show, and we'll join Philly Press Box Radio next Wednesday night, September 23rd, with our special guest, Mark Eckel of NJ.com. You can listen to our Facebook page and like our Philly Press Box Radio page on the internet at www.blogtalkradio.com/Philly Press Box Radio. And now on both iTunes and Stitcher. You can also like our Blog Talk Radio page and get all of our updates as well. High hopes, Philadelphia sports fans.